From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Drew Lerner, who's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, to discuss the weather forecast. And along the way, Gary Schnupke will join us in studio to take up the Arc County payments that were just made by USDA to producers across the whole of the nation. And it happens right here on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 19th day of October 2016, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Ellen.
Hi there, Todd.
Very good to talk with you this afternoon. Normally, so folks that listen to us from time to time are probably familiar with you. You've been on the air at the home station on Thursday mornings for a very long time at 8:55 each and every day, and they can hear you tomorrow morning and on our website, too, in the opening market report at WILLAG.org. So what do you have to tell me about today's trade in Chicago?
Well, I think the die was cast when USDA came out with another bean sale listed at 8 o'clock this morning, this time to unknown destinations. But we had such a large sale to China yesterday, and this one was kind of icing on that cake. So the bean started out looking pretty firm, and interestingly enough, the bean meal, which really hasn't been able to follow the bean oil's big surge, the bean meal held together rather well today. You know, this bean oil situation, we really have tightening world stocks of all vegetable oils. And Canada came out yesterday late saying that an awful lot of their canola crop was still in the field and getting wet. So that kind of contributes to the red hot palm oil market that we've already seen over the last couple of weeks. Really have seen this bean oil just take off. It's rather difficult to maintain a big bean rally when we don't have meal going, so seeing meal up $3 today was a pretty favorable sign. I liked the fact that the corn came back and closed on day's highs, and also that the wheat managed to have a hookup as well. You know, the corn market went down early this morning and tested and took out yesterday's low. There weren't any sell stops down there, which is what I thought we were finding some fishing for those stops on the sell side, and they didn't come. End users continue to be short bought both the corn and the beans, and there's an awful large book out of the U.S. Gulf, particularly Ocnov-Dis, on the bean side. You might notice that the basis on beans, at least on the river market, has really improved in this November-December time slot.
So fundamentally, we have large supplies of both corn and soybeans. However, you're telling me those supplies are being either held off the marketplace, in the case of corn, I think, and or being pushed higher on short supplies in the case of soybeans by a world short supply of vegetable oil, hampered in part by some problems that came along with El Nino out of Indonesia and palm oil, and then, of course, the thing you discussed just now where Canadian canola still not harvested at this time. All of those are vegetable oil crops. Technically, where do we stand with each of them, and can you make a case either for a bull or a bearish move?
We are still in the sideways mode on these beans, but we're on the high side of things and really need to see a probe on November beans above, say, 988. 990 was last month's high in the November contract to give us a move up into the 1020 range. Not a lot of downside risk, probably to the 960 area, but it seems like end users are supporting this market on dips. On the corn side of things, we still are talking about a head and shoulders bottom on the December futures, giving us an upside count around this 370, 372 area. I think there is significant resistance in this 359 area, 360. I think we did close right close to this 20-day moving average, 358 and a quarter or a half, something along that line. If we get above that, my guess is we'd find some buy stops. I think the corn is finding really good support given all the news about a large crop. And, you know, we always talk about oats' nose, and oats were up 5.25 cents today in the nearby month. I think the oats made about a six-month high today. Well, we are back up to where we were in July in oats. The wheat market, as long as we can hold the nearby December wheat above 410, awfully good support there. We ought to see another shot up in the 425 to 435 range, something along that line. Not a lot of oomph right now on the wheat, so it could be a little bit of a laggard.
And finally, livestock cattle and feed report is due out on Friday afternoon. What do you see in that marketplace?
The cattle market really took a hard hit today, and the feeder cattle too. Seems like we get up and rally about two and a half days, and the funds come back in and do some selling. There's an awful lot of cattle that have yet to move. Excellent packer margins, but the retail price is yet to come down, so we're not seeing huge clearances at the retail level. This cattle on feed report will show more numbers, but it probably will show very current feedlots. Probably see the marketings during the month of September up as much as 6%.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time this afternoon.
Very well.
That, of course, is Ellen Dearden. She's with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. If you're a farmer, you may have already received this check in the mail, probably so, from the United States government, as it relates to your Arc County payments for the 2015 crop. However, you might be wondering what those payments look like across the nation and in Illinois. Gary Schnitke is here to talk about some of that with me today. He's an agricultural economist from the U of I. Thanks, Gary, for being with us. Tell me about Arc County.
Arc County is a commodity title program. It has over 90% of the base acres enrolled in it, in corn and soybeans in Illinois. And FSA released 2015 county yields and payments this past week. So people have been getting paid, and we do know the yields.
So those of you who have signed up may look in your mailbox, and you might find a check. They're also delivering those directly into your bank accounts if you've signed up that way. So it may have already deposited. You'll want to take a look. Arc County payments have any restrictions on the top side? Are they capped?
Yep. Arc County has restrictions on the top side of $125,000 per individual, so husband and wife would be $250,000. If, as is in Illinois, many farms will be receiving about a $60 payment per base acre, that would work out to be about a little over 2,000 acre farm would be hitting that payment limitation of $125,000.
So there we have kind of some real feel for what this means. Now tell me a little bit, and you started in on this, about payments in the state of Illinois. What did they look like? Were there any standouts that were different for you?
Yeah, so we did the payment rates across Illinois. And by the way, when you receive your check, that probably did not break out down where those payments came from, corn, soybeans, and wheat. We broke those all down and put those on an article on Farm Doc Daily. But if you're looking at payments in Illinois for corn, they ranged from somewhere in the $70 range. For example, DeKalb County had a $77 payment per acre, all the way down to zero, which was Piatt County. And Piatt County had very high yields, so they ended up with a $0 payment. If you do sort of the average, those are in the $60 to $70 an acre range. Again, northern Illinois had a bit higher payments, followed by central Illinois, and then payments tend to be a bit lower in southern Illinois.
Yeah, so you put down the payments. However, it's I don't know that it's confusing, but you have to recall that it's not based on what you had planted, but it's based on the acreage and the split, or what it normally would be. And so you'd be paid on a combination of
base acres. So when farmers signed up for the 2014 Farm Bill, there was a base acres in corn, soybean, and wheat. So that is the number of acres that were paid on. The planted acres for 2015, and these are 2015 payments, by the way, related to 2015 production. Planted acres in that year do not matter. It's the base acres. And farmers had the opportunity to keep their old base acres or update those to more recent plantings when they signed up for the 2014 Farm Bill.
So just for curiosity's sake, most probably would be 50-50, 1 year corn, 1 year soybean, so they take the average of the two payments.
Actually, in Illinois, it's probably more 60-40 or 70-30, 70% corn, 30% soybeans. If you look at the payment structure of farm when they signed up for payments, you had an incentive to keep corn acres rather than soybean acres, so over time we have more corn base acres than we do soybean base acres.
Nationally, does anything stick out to you in the way these were paid out?
So if you're looking at national payments for corn and soybeans, they tend to be centered, or the larger payments tend to be centered in Illinois, upper Illinois, going up through Wisconsin. Again, those areas in 2015 probably had lower yields than much of the other areas. They tended to be less as we got away from that area.
How much will this do to help producers in their, fourth year of very low profits, maybe zero profits? And what do they use? What can they expect for the next year?
So in Illinois, you're probably looking at something in the $40 to $60 an acre per base acre payment. Again, some counties will be zero, but $40 to $60, and that will obviously be a big, big help. $50 an acre, let's say, is going to be a good payment. We would still be looking for incomes to be low this year, because we're still looking at, even though we have high prices, low yields, and still persistently high costs. So this will be a big help. But, you know, we're still looking at low incomes. Next year, those ARC County payments will most likely be coming down. I would expect roughly half to a third, maybe, and maybe even lower than that, depending on what happens. It's very conceivable that next year there, or for 2016 production, there won't be any payments. So, but a third of the payment that happened this year. Again, what's happening is the guarantees will be going down because we're using five-year averages of prices and yields, and prices have been coming down, so our guarantees are coming down.
Can you read the last sentence of your article for me? What does it say?
Last sentence says, an urgent need to cut cash flows now and through 27 continues. So our county payment, but we still have a cash flow problem.
Gary Schnittke, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us. Look forward, too, to having you with us during the Farm Assets Conference on the 22nd day of November. People can come, and you and Jonathan Kappas will be there as part of a listening session that the state's major commodity organizations and farm organizations have been putting together, really to talk about what the 2017-2018 Farm Bill might look like and what producers think it should look like.
So we're going to give a little background on where we are at on the Farm Bill and crop insurance programs. It's highly likely that we will be facing another set of budget cuts come up with the next Farm Bill, and then we're going to have to argue where those budget comes from. Will it come from the commodity title and probably PLC at that time, or more for crop insurance?
And in fact, we'll have everybody with their clickers. We won't know who's got what clicker, but they'll be answering questions and getting opinions. We'll also have an open mic. Yeah. It sounds like a dangerous day, but it should be fun, and we'll be looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, and I'll just remind the participants that neither Jonathan nor I make policy. We provide advice, so it'll be a fun day.
Absolutely, and those who want to come and participate can. It's just $30, the Farm Assets Conference at farmassetsconference.com. There's a whole lot more going on there. You can check it out on that website or at willag.org. And if you're a farmer, you happen to come to this event, you might want to come early. The Illinois Corn Growers Association has their annual meeting at 8 o'clock. We kick off at 10:30. We'll do the listening session first. And the farmers who are participating in that listening session, you do have to pay for your ticket up front. But the associations, along with the major farm organizations in the state, will reimburse you for your $30. So should be a great
good
day.
Deal.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Gary Schnittke, of course, an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Wednesday, we're joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks so much for being with us, Drew. Can you start us out in the Great Plains and the hard red winter wheat growing regions, whether they're there or further to the south, and give me an idea how things are beginning for them?
Yeah, we are running a little dry. You know, it rained frequently all summer long out there in the plains. It was one of the best summer crops that we've seen in the Central Plains in years. And the rain was plentiful and bolstered soil moisture and water supply. It was a great thing. But as soon as the first day of planting of winter wheat season came along, it kind of stopped raining in some areas. There are several locations in southwest Kansas and parts of eastern Colorado that have gone 30 to 40 days without any rain. And a big part of the last 30 days from the Texas Panhandle into Nebraska and Colorado have seen less than half of normal rainfall, with some areas 25% or less. So it's been drying down, but all that rain that occurred over the summer was significant enough to help these crops get off to a good start. So the planting has advanced well. Emergence has occurred also fairly well. But now these unirrigated crops in the last couple of weeks have really taken on the chin. Temperatures have gotten hot. We were seeing temperatures in the 90s. To record-setting readings over 100 degrees Monday and Sunday, both this week. In fact, we have never seen 100-degree temperatures occur in the month of October. Anyway, that, on top of the dryness out there, has really pushed this crop to the limit, and we do need to see some significant rain right away in order to keep it a healthy crop.
Let's stay with the warm temps just for a moment. What does it mean, if anything, in the Midwest?
Well, certainly the warmth has helped us out a lot, certainly with the wetter bias we had earlier in the harvest season. If it hadn't been warm, we would have been stuck behind the eight ball with all the moisture that we had. But we have managed to dry down quite a few areas, and the situation is really quite favorable right now for harvest progress. We do have a little bit of rain coming up here today and tomorrow across the Ohio River Basin area. But outside of that, I think we don't see any kind of substantial precipitation events until next week, and that should allow for quite a bit of field work to take place.
And speaking of field work, what have you been watching in South America?
Well, you know, Brazil, there's been a lot of chatter out there about Brazil and La Nina. Some folks think it's good. Some folks think that maybe La Nina would be a bad thing. The bottom line is that we don't have La Nina officially. We have La Nina-like conditions, and because of that, we don't have a full-blown influence from that phenomenon. And what I do see is the prevailing weather pattern in Brazil offering to produce a regular occurrence of rainfall across a big part of the country as it would in any normal summer. And if we add in this La Nina-like influence, we might have a little bit of a drier tendency in the south once in a while, but because we don't have a full-blown La Nina, we're probably going to see timely rainfall. And for the majority of the country right now, we're looking ahead the next 2 or 3 weeks, and it looks to me like the seasonal monsoon event is going to begin just right on time, and we should see much increased rainfall across center west and center south Brazil over this next 2 to 3 week period, and that should change a lot of mentality out there towards one of a favorable crop year ahead.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated.